Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. This is Studio 7. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Sithandekile Mhlanga.
Here are our top stories this evening.
ZANU-PF lawmakers quiz Tonga who led Zimbabwe bosses over allegations that the sugar giant sponsored the Joyce Mujuru faction in ZANU-PF, which is being accused of plotting to assassinate President Robert Mugabe.
We have heard several allegations that your company, Tanga Toilet, is working in conjunction with certain politicians in the plot to assassinate the president.
Civic organizations and colleagues of activist and freelance journalist Itai Dzamara was abducted 10 days ago by alleged state agents are holding a prayer meeting in Harare this evening after marching in the city earlier to highlight his plight.
Government should produce Dzamara because we pay taxes to be protected. And if we are not actually adhering to that, then we will continue demonstrating. And we will continue demonstrating until we see...
And media workers are bemoaning the closure of newspapers and the scaling down of operations by some as operating costs continue to escalate.
The political cleanup in ZANU-PF following the ousting of former Vice President Joyce Mujuru and her allies is continuing, with lawmakers now taking aim at companies perceived to have supported Mrs. Mujuru or members of her team. ZANU-PF lawmakers today quizzed the Tonga Tuhulet Zimbabwe bosses over allegations that the sugar giant had sponsored politicians who are being accused of plotting to assassinate President Robert Mugabe and replace him with his former deputy. Ivan Chifera has details from Harare.
Appearing before the National Assembly's Indigenization Committee today to discuss the company's black empowerment plans, Managing Director Sidin Mutsambiwa was quizzed for allegedly supporting ousted ZANU-PF ministers said to be in Ms. Mujuru's camp, in particular former Energy Minister Dzikamai Mavaire and former Mashingo Provincial Affairs Minister Kudakwashe Basikiti. ZANU-PF lawmakers maintained the ousted Mujuru and her colleagues were plotting to topple President Robert Mugabe. Some, like Makoni West MP Kudzichipanga, even suggested the two politicians were shareholders in the company and using their influence to support Ms. Mujuru's quest to eliminate President Mugabe.
Ms. Mutsambiwa, we have heard several allegations that your company, Tanga Toilet, is working in conjunction with certain politicians in Mashingo province in a plot to assassinate the president, Comrade Robert Gabriel Mugabe. What's your take on that one?
But Mutsambiwa said the two were not shareholders in the company, adding that Tonga Tuhulet had never funded any, quote, nefarious or subversive activities. He, however, said the company had made financial contributions towards the hosting of ZANU-PF's December Congress after being approached by Basikiti in his official capacity as Mashingo Provincial Affairs Minister.
Honorable Mavaire and Basikiti, the two gentlemen are not shareholders of any of our companies. Secondly, we have never sponsored them in their individual capacity, other than in the capacity that they approached our organization as members of ZANU-PF in order to facilitate certain activities that, for example, the national conferences, etc., which we have supported for a long time.
Mutsambiwa said the company supported ZANU-PF for many years, with the money being deposited in the ruling party's head office account. He, however, did not reveal how much the company has been forced to put in the ZANU-PF coffers. Companies have over the years complained of being forced to contribute towards ZANU-PF activities in cash and kind, especially over the past decade. Mutsambiwa said the company had submitted its indigenization plan, adding it has not yet complied with the empowerment law, which compels foreign-owned companies to cede 51% shareholding to blacks. At present, local blacks own 34.4% of the company. Mutsambiwa said Tonga Tuhulet was expecting to earn empowerment credits from the many socio-economic development products the company is undertaking in the area it operates to reach the 51% threshold.
We respectfully seek compliance through recognition of our empowerment initiatives so that we qualify for credits in lieu of specific shareholding as required in the Act. That's the endeavor that we are trying to progress.
Some of the projects the company is working on include the upgrading and repair of Chiredzi Town water reticulation works, construction of roads, schools, revamping Buffalo Range Airport, and several other development projects, which Msambiwa says have so far gobbled $3 million. He said the company is of the view that the indigenization law must be reviewed, as in its current state is scaring away investors. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifel.
Civic organizations and colleagues of activist and freelance journalist Itai Dzamara, who was abducted 10 days ago by alleged state agents, are holding a prayer meeting in Harare this evening after marching in the city in the afternoon to highlight his plight. The family and colleagues of Dzamara, a leader of a movement called Occupy Africa Unity Square, which criticizes President Mugabe's alleged mismanagement of the economy, say his whereabouts are still unknown. Although the government has denied any knowledge of Dzamara's whereabouts, MDCT's organizing secretary Abednego Bebe tells Studio 7 that his party believes only the state can locate Dzamara.
The job for the CIO is to make sure that they actually guard the country against insurgents that can come and commit such kinds of crimes like abducting people. And it has been proved that the people that have abducted Dzamara broad daylight, they similarly looked like trained people. And if they were trained people, even if they were insurgents, we strongly believe that there is connivance between those insurgents and the CIO. As we are saying, the CIO should protect Dzamara.
Other than the blame game and demonstrations and gatherings, what else do you think should be done so that Dzamara's whereabouts are known?
What should be done is the government should produce Dzamara, full stop, period. Government should produce Dzamara because we pay taxes to be protected. And if they are not actually adhering to that, then we'll continue demonstrating. And we'll continue demonstrating until we see where he's bombed out.
But the government has denied any knowledge of Dzamara's whereabouts.
Denial of that knowledge means government has said they should resign en masse because it is their job to protect Zimbabweans, and they've not done so.
That was Abednego Bebe, National Organizing Secretary for the Movement for Democratic Change, formation of former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai, on the line from Bulawayo.
The price of bread was slashed today following the introduction of the coins, which the government says would make it easier for both retailers and customers in particular who were being shortchanged by being offered a change in kind over the years. The wholesale bread price has been reduced in 90 cents to 85 cents, with the benefits being passed on to the consumer. The reduction in the price of bread follows similar cuts in the prices of beer, soft drinks and mobile phone tariffs. We reached the Grain Millers Association of Zimbabwe President Tafadzwa Musarara, who says the reduction of prices will go a long way in helping hard-pressed families.
We have answered to the call by the Zimbabwean governor when he brought in the bond coins. The bond coins were not meant for playing James Bond. No, there's value, there's a reason. And the reason was to provide convenience and divisibility. You would find a situation that in the absence of it, the pricing models become ridiculous. For instance, someone wants to buy a bun in Zimbabwe. We've told it costs 50 cents for 5 buns. So if you've got 50 cents, he is now forced to eat only bun. But the actual cost of bun is 10 cents. And in the absence of coins, one is forced to buy things that they don't want to buy. Now, since the change is available, you said let bread now check its correct price. And also, we have different brands of bread, and they have them paying at the same price. That's something wrong with that. If you look at other products in the shops, if you look at soap, the prices differ from one brand to the other. And that variation must also show on the bread so that consumers can make a choice. But that has not been happening, and it has been killing some competitiveness in that regard. Then the second phase that we're moving into now is to negotiate the lower price of wheat so that from our international mission, so that we'll be able to reduce the price.
And that was Grain Millers Association of Zimbabwe President Tafadzwa Musarara on the line from Harare. Media workers are bemoaning the closure of newspapers and the scaling down of operations by some as operating costs continue to escalate. The Zimbabwe Mail, an independent daily newspaper, yesterday printed its last copy amid reports that another weekly, the Southern Eye, will close shop at the end of the month due to biting costs. Workers at the state-run newspaper Stable were asked to go on early retirement. The editor of the Zimbabwe Mail, a newspaper run by a consortium of business people led by Transport Minister Obed Mpofu, Constantine Chimakure, confirmed that the paper has been shut down. Editor-in-chief of the Southern Eye, Vincent Kahia, refused to talk about the paper's shutdown. We spoke to media analyst Zenzele Ndebele, who is also a journalism lecturer at the National University of Science and Technology in Bulawayo, who says it is said that the number of journalism graduates is growing while media organizations are closing down.
Basically, this shows the state of the economy because the Zimbabwean economy is not doing well. Many companies are closing. Many companies are not performing well. Many companies are under judicial management or they are under debt, which means they are not advertising because basically the newspaper business, many people get money or most organizations get money out of business. And if you find that individuals who used to buy newspapers, at this peak, a newspaper could circulate 60,000 copies a day, but these days newspapers hardly circulate more than 10,000 a day. So that means people here don't have the buying power to buy a newspaper. Newspaper is now a luxury.
So what do you think the journalists who are being retrenched because of the closure of newspapers are going to do?
I'm sure they will just join the long list of Zimbabweans who are unemployed unless they either leave the country and go to the diaspora or they advance themselves and try and go back to the universities to try and teach. Because the irony of it is that while newspapers are actually closing, more universities are offering journalism degrees because there are now about five or so institutions that teach journalism. But obviously not everyone will be able to teach. The most will remain unemployed. They will just increase the percentage of people unemployed in Zimbabwe.
And that was Zenzele Ndebele, a media analyst. He's also a journalism lecturer at the National University of Science and Technology in Bulawayo. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Bulawayo.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
the Human Rights NGO Forum spreads the word on the National Peace and Reconciliation Commission as it seeks an end to political violence.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
The president of Malawi is calling for stronger efforts to catch and punish those behind a series of albino killings.
United States First Lady Michelle Obama is continuing her trip to Japan, where she is touting an initiative aimed at helping girls in developing countries finish their education.
And Tunisian authorities have arrested 9 people in connection with a massacre at a Tunis museum that killed 23 people.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America.
Zimbabwe's political climate has over the years been poisoned by the cycle of violence becoming the order of the day. How to help raise awareness on issues around national peace and reconciliation, the Human Rights NGO Forum is currently making pit stops around the country. The main issue the forum is tackling in its outreach program is the National Peace and Reconciliation Commission, one of the 5 independent commissions provided for by in the new constitution. The NGO Forum is also offering free legal services to the survivors of politically motivated violence. For perspective on the program, reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with Hill Zimbabwe Trust Director Rashid Mahia and Dzikama Ibere, a researcher with the Human Rights NGO Forum. Bere says as Zimbabwe moves towards eliminating the cycle of political violence, there's need to first educate the populace on the independent commission and how it will work to ensure peace and stability prevail in the country.
Once people get to know about it, it shows that they are eager to participate in the process, but they are kind of disappointed that they are not being involved in national processes that are being run by a parliament which they have elected.
Mr. Mahia, can we talk about the government itself? Are they open to dealing with CSOs in order to quantitize this problem?
I think the government has, in a number of cases, allowed us to work in the communities that we have targeted. In the majority of cases, we have not faced up to date, but that is as far as it goes, and I don't know what else we would expect of government for now. The issue that I think we are practically grappling with is that the issues of national healing and reconciliation cannot be dealt with in isolation to issues of justice, in isolation to issues of people's confidence in the sincerity of government. It cannot be dealt with in isolation from the fact that the institutions that were part and people that were also in those institutions part of the violation are still in positions of authority. So there is a depth of trust in the communities about the sincerity of government as it is composed.
And Mr. Bere, can you talk on that issue, the government response when it comes to reconciliation?
I think the first thing that I need to mention is that much of the responsibility rests with Parliament, because it is Parliament that is saddened with this responsibility by the Constitution. So we are the ones who are supposed to support government and not the other way around. But what we see on the ground is that as far as activating public participation and giving information to the public, the government is doing much, much less than what would be desired. For example, you will know that on 23 April, the Parliament published the call for nominations. This call for nominations was only restricted to the mainstream media, the leading papers, and in English. While our Constitution is very clear in Section 3B, that the Parliament or any agents of government in conducting its business must pay attention to the communication needs of the community.
Mr. Mahia, looking forward, what are some of the things that should be implemented, especially when it comes to the commission the government has set?
First of all, is to ensure that the commission itself is operational. But after having done that, there is need for government, as Kamaya said, to raise the awareness of communities of that committee, its operations and what they expected of it. But most importantly, it is to get communities to discuss and talk about what is it that they expect of the commission and of the process. Because we do not want the process that is imposed from government or from the elite on to the communities. So we want the communities to say what form of programs would they accept or would be useful in the communities and relevant to the communities that they are in. Because we do not think there is a one-size-fits-all program that will be implemented and allow issues of reconciliation to be dealt with.
Mr. Bere, I'll end here with you. Same question. The commission, does it have enough power, and how can it be empowered?
If you look at the mandate that is granted to the commission by the Constitution, I think there is so much power that is given to the commission. The Constitution says it is supposed to ensure post-conflict healing, justice, and reconciliation. Already you can see elements of justice and healing and reconciliation there. Now I think there will be a need to decode that constitution into an enabling act which clearly specifies how the commission is going to work. Sometimes it doesn't matter to have a good law as long as you have bad implementers of that law. Now, if I reconcile this with what the communities are saying in the areas that we are traveling, there's a bit of suspicion, because people are saying, what will this commission be different from the commissions that we have had that have produced nothing? And our emphasis is that this process must be different.
Dzikama Ibere is a researcher with the Human Rights NGO Forum. You also heard the views of Rashid Mahia, the director of Hill Zimbabwe Trust.
A son of Zimbabwe's first post-independence president, Kenan Sodindo Banana, says centralization of political power has devastated the Southern African nation, once regarded as one of the continent's breadbaskets. 48-year-old Nathan Sipho Banana, who described the state house where he grew up as an executive prison, says this said development can only be reversed in if Zimbabweans adopt a common national socio-economic vision. Banana aids, this can be enhanced through accountability and transparency among nation's political leaders. He speaks to Studio 7's Gibbs Dube in this exclusive interview, in which he also talks about his childhood and life after leaving the State House.
It was really hard, you know, having a father who is a head of state at the same time, who seemed to be respected and sometimes feared by some people. It was kind of tense at times to approach him as a dad to ask for certain things. He was very open-minded and quite welcoming all the time.
How was it to grow up at State House, bodyguard school and all that kind of thing?
I would describe it as an executive prison. It was quite exciting at first when we first went there. It wasn't as luxurious as people might think it is, because if you had to go out, you needed to give kind of notice, like 2 weeks notice if you wanted to go and visit a friend. If you want to go to a movie, you need to give notice.
And so how has it been to actually adjust to normal life?
Normal life was tough after State House, because still people had that notion that, oh, yeah, the president's child. At work, it was hard because people did not expect you to fail. And at the same time, you could not achieve, like, do very well, because they'll think that maybe favoritism.
And what are your views about Zimbabwe soon after independence?
The first few years of independence, some of us were still quite young, but memories of before and after independence are quite vivid as well. Things seemed quite well because there was more of like separation of power between the presidents and government. So I think that kind of stabilized the whole environment and decisions could be made in a more structured manner. Whereas now everything has become so centralized. Harare became the fastest growing city in Zimbabwe, and all the other provincial cities were at a standstill, which I think wasn't such a great move.
And what do you think about the current state of Zimbabwe?
Times are hard. What I tell people is that we can't keep on crying over spilled milk. I think there's a lot of healing that's needed initially. A lot of conflict, a lot of wounds still open and people don't want to move on. Those things, it's hard for a nation to move on when those things are still open. So we need to really try and find closure somehow so that we can start moving forward as a nation. There's need for a common vision amongst Zimbabweans. One political party has a different ideology to the other. Even if it's like that, it's important to have a common national vision, like economic development vision, that everybody can agree and say, listen, this is where we need to be going. Even if we disagree on A, B, C, D, but let's have some key points that we can look at in terms of moving forward. I think the main problem really is to do with accountability and transparency. We need to hold people who are in leadership more accountable for their actions and decisions. And right now, it's a bit hard with our institutions quite partisan-lined. We have a partisan-aligned kind of police force, army, even to a certain extent our justice system. And I mean, once we have a system like that, it really is hard to challenge certain individuals in society in terms of demanding certain changes.
That was Nathan Sipho Banana, the son of Zimbabwe's first post-independence president, Kenan Sodindo Banana, who was convicted and jailed for sodomy. In the second edition of this interview tomorrow, Nathan Sipho Banana speaks about his father's conviction and mother, who is living in the United Kingdom. Don't miss it tomorrow here on Studio 7.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will discuss with you on the Women's Forum about immigration issues affecting Zimbabweans in South Africa.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
And in sports news, the 2015 Castle Premiership season gets underway tomorrow afternoon with a match between Harare City and newcomers Cholocho Football Club. Sports commentator Muziwethu Hadebe says if the pre-season friendlies are anything to go by, the season matches promises to be competitive and exciting, starting with the first match tomorrow at the Rufaro Stadium between Harare City and Cholocho.
Cholocho are newcomers. They haven't invested a lot in their team in terms of new players, while Harare City have got a new coach in Taurai Manguiro, and they also made a number of buys in pre-season. You're looking at Tembans of Opin, perhaps their most significant purchase, and they will be expected to pick a maximum point to them. But the program goes on to Saturday, where FC Platinum are expected to do well against another newcomer in the league, that is Dongo Sawmills at Mandawa Stadium. They've not been doing very well in terms of the Confederations Cup, so they would want to improve. Also on Saturday, Chikenina take on another of the newcomers, Flame Lily, at Kuveve Stadium. Chikenina have returned their captain, Danny Piri, but they've also brought in Michel Katsairo, and will be expected to pick maximum points at home at Kuveve Stadium. Also on Saturday, Champions Dynamos host Buffaloes, a team that beat them in this fixture last year when they were under Luke Masomere. But this is a new picture. This is also a new Dynamos team, and they will be expected to pick maximum points against Buffaloes. The last match on Saturday, we'll see ZPC Kariba, who finished agonizingly second last year, hosting Highlanders. This fixture last year, also at Gwanzura, produced a 1-1 draw. ZPC Kariba then beat Highlanders 3-1 at Hartsfield in a match that saw Kelvin Kayindu quitting as Highlanders coach. And it would be interesting as well to see if Highlanders can record their first win against the ZPC Kariba. Then on Sunday, Triangle will host Wange at Gibo. This is going to be a tight one. Kelvin Kayindu is the new coach at Triangle. They'll be expected to maximize the home advantage and pick maximum points. And then Haumain take on Chapungu at Luveve Stadium. Haumain have also had a number of big signings. You're talking of Charles Ibanda, you're talking of the likes of Muparati, you're talking of Devon Shafa, although Muparati is out injured alongside a limited Chikafa, but they still look like a solid team. On the other hand, Chapungu are very physical, and maybe I won't be surprised to see a draw from this one, because Haumain yet to come up with the right combination. And then the last fixture of the weekend, we'll see newcomers from the Midlands, Wawa, take on Caps United. Caps United have done reasonably well. They've got also a new coach in Mark Harrison, and they will be wishing that they can have a good season. It's going to be unpredictable. Wawa would want to pick something from this one, and maybe a draw will be coming out from that one. So the fans looking forward to some exciting football from the first week of the Kasilaga Premiership, which kicks off tomorrow when Harare City hosts Cholocho at Rufaro.
You took, you know, words out of my mouth there. I was just about to ask you about the newcomers, whether they will be able to upset, you know, the traditional teams that have always been in the Premier League.
Well, you're looking at Cholocho. They've preferred not to spend a lot. They've got a coach who enjoys learning. That is Lizwe. So he's always investing in terms of his football knowledge, attending various coaching courses. And if he can apply that with his boys, they can survive. But their trick there will be to try and win their home matches, which in the first half of the season they will be playing in Bulawayo at White City Stadium. Then you're looking at Ndongo Sawmills. Not much has been said about them. Maybe that's the team that might struggle in terms of coping with the demands of top-flight football. But let's not just roll them away. Then we mentioned the Flame Lily. They start with Chicken Inn. Flame Lily might be new in the Premier League, but they are quite an old club that has always been hanging there in the Northern Division 1 football. But they have also an experienced coach in former Black Rhinos coach Nesbitt Saruchena, himself a former top-flight football player, and they will be expected to use his experience to do well in the league. Wawa, also not the best of the teams, if one might put it that way, but given that they have Luke Petros, a player who did well during his playing days as a coach, now might want to use what he learned during his playing days as a coach. Also, Lloyd Mutasa is their technical director, so they can bank on that, just like Flame Lily, to try and survive in the league. So they might cope, but I think the opening five games are going to be key for the newcomers.
That was sports commentator Muzwetu Hadebe speaking on the line with Studio 7 from Bulawayo.
That's all we have for you today. This is Sithandekile Mhlanga in Washington.
And Chris Gande. Now please stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. hosted by yours truly, Chris Gande, with Ntunga Milinkomo. Good night.